entre dos empresas líderes en sus sectores, Vaughan y Colegio Europeo de Madrid. Recuerda, llama al 91-636-1919 o escribe un mail a vaughan@educacem.com e infórmate.
Gentlemen, and welcome to Western Civilization, from Mesopotamia to Silicon Valley. I'm your host, my name is Guy Williams, and on this program, I'm going to be speaking of the ancient Greek god Apollo. I spoke about him briefly on my last program, talking about some of the things he did in relation to his son. His son was Asclepius. His son was the god of medicine, the god of healing, the first physician, the first doctor. I also talked about Apollo in the sense of the idea that because he was the owner, let's put it that way, the owner of Delphi, Delphi considered to be the center of the world. Delphi, previously supposed to be sacred to Gaia, the earth goddess. It was her ombligo. It was her navel. And from that, you had priestesses, the Pythonesses, who were able to predict the future. And their oracular powers were famous all throughout Greece. There you had Mount Parnassus, where the Muses lived. And on my last program, I talked a little bit about the theory that the fact that Apollo is there might represent the coming of the patriarchy, perhaps an earlier matriarchal situation in which you have goddesses and female leaders, and how this was replaced. There are a theory that it was replaced all throughout Europe with male leaders and gods rather than goddesses. In any case, Delphi, Apollo is supposed to have beaten the serpent. Serpent, again, a symbol of healing, a symbol of rebirth, because the snake can get rid of its skin. This is kind of a resurrection. Snakes were supposed to be immortal in the ancient world because they can do this. They come out like new, transformed, rejuvenated, and this makes them symbolic of again healing, and this is why, of course, if you go to any pharmacy today, you have the el bastón de Asclepio, the staff of Asclepius, and yet the true snake, the python, defeated by Apollo in Delphi. Now, in on the island of Crete, for example, a previous culture, a Minoan culture, you have many statues of women holding snakes, and so there was a theory that this could be a kind of a matriarchal religion previous to Apollo. By the way, Apollo was not one of the original Greek gods. His origin, it might have been Anatolian, or he came from outside. He was not listed in the earliest Greek writings we have referring to gods. Apollo is not there. In Homer's version of the Iliad, in the Trojan War, Apollo fights for the Trojans against the Greeks. couple of months ago, I also spoke about Apollo in the incident, the story in which you have a satyr called Marsyas who challenged Apollo, the god of music, to a music contest. And Apollo, playing a lyre, whereas Marsyas was playing an aulos, which is a flute, and because the lyre can be played with the fingers, you don't need your breath to do it. Breath being synonymous with the soul, it isn't that physical. It is much more intellectual to play a musical instrument simply with your fingers rather than breathing into it. And in this way, Apollo is thus representing reason, rationality, logic, whereas Marsyas is not. Apollo is very beautiful. Marsyas is ugly. And all of this coming back, the context in which I was referring to it was in the Platonic dialogue, the symposium, in which at one moment you have the Athenian politician Alcibiades coming in totally drunk and comparing Socrates to this satyr, Marsyas. It's a question of who played better. The judge, according to one of these stories, King Midas, of the Midas touch, King Midas of Lydia, Midas decided that Marsyas was the better player, and Apollo, to punish him, gave him donkey ears, so that King Midas had the ears of a donkey. In order to cover this up, he invented el gorro frigio, the Phrygian cap. Remember, he was from Lydia in Phrygia. And the Phrygian cap associated with liberty. Apollo, in this case, with tyranny because of his great cruelty. He skinned Marsyas alive. Apollo took off Marsyas's skin while Marsyas was alive. And this example of cruelty, of unfairness, of tyranny, meant that throughout the ages, Marsyas has been seen as a sort of a hero. There are many rulers that like to style themselves as a modern Apollo. One of them, for example, the very first Roman emperor, Augustus, liked to consider himself, show himself as a modern Apollo. But just as Apollo had been a tyrant in this case of Marsyas, well, there was a representation of Marsyas in the Roman Forum. And Apollo, or rather, Augustus's own daughter went to the forum and prayed in front of this representation of Marsyas. In other words, Marsyas, as a sign of protest, of rebellion, of subversion, of freedom. So yes, Apollo is not always the good god. Now, Apollo was born of a swan. His mother, Leto, gave birth to twins. Hera, Zeus's wife, was so jealous that Zeus, you know, had been with Hera, or rather, had been with Leto. Leto was transformed into a cisne, into a swan. For some reason, this was a very, very, very popular the thing in the ancient world, depiction in art. You see Zeus having sex with a swan. And you know that swan is Leto. Now, she gives birth to twins, Apollo and his sister, Artemis, also called Diana, the huntress. In some traditions, both Apollo and Artemis, they were born in eggs. So they came into the world in the form of eggs. Well, Hera tried to prevent Leto from giving birth, stopped her. She couldn't give birth anywhere in Greece. Finally, she was welcomed on the island of Delos, out in the middle of the Aegean Sea. Delos at this point was, I think, supposed to be a floating island. It was not a real island at this point. And so, technically, it was not on land, so that, it was a technicality. They gave, she gave birth on Delos, first to Artemis, and Artemis, because she is the goddess of midwives, right? She's the patroness of midwives and midwifery. Artemis was able to help her to deliver her brother. At this point, Zeus had given birth to lots of daughters, but Apollo is the first male. Leto is Zeus's sixth wife, to put it that way. But Apollo is his firstborn son. Now, you have to remember that Zeus became the king of the gods because he destroyed his own father, Cronos. And Cronos, in turn, became the king of the gods because he destroyed his father. There were... This is like the third generation with Zeus in charge, and Zeus always seen as a kind of tyrant, tyrannical. At one point, Apollo, Athena, and Hera conspire. They all grow tired of the tyranny of Zeus and go to Poseidon for help. Poseidon, called Neptune, right, among the Romans. Poseidon being Zeus's brother, Poseidon being much stronger than Zeus, but less ambitious. Poseidon could defeat Zeus easily if he wanted to, but he doesn't want to. He does not want to be king. He does not want to sit on the throne. At one point, Homer calls Poseidon the power behind the throne. Now, they go to Poseidon, Apollo, Hera, and Athena, arguing that he would be much better for the world as a ruler than Zeus. Poseidon sort of agrees, but the plot is uncovered. It is unsuccessful. And Poseidon and Apollo are punished by building the walls of Troy. That is their that is the restitution that they have to provide. Well, Hera is put upside down, right? She hangs from her ankles, looking into chaos. Looking into the void, right? Emptiness. And she suffers. At one point, Apollo hurts, her, the person whose life she has, consistently tried to ruin, Hercules, right? Hercules or Heracles, his name actually means gift from Hera. So that the relationship, the love-hate relationship between Heracles and Hera is continuous. At one point, Hercules hits Hera on the face, if I remember correctly, and she suffers. The gods, the Greek gods at least, were capable of feeling pain, capable of suffering. As I say, Zeus's rule was always under question. At one point, Athena's mother, Metis, was Zeus's first wife. But he learned that she was going to give birth to two children, a girl and a boy, and that the boy would overthrow him. So the boy was going to do to Zeus what Zeus had done to his father, Cronos, and what Cronos had done to his father. Zeus couldn't stand this idea. He transformed Metis into a fly and swallowed her. But a few months later, he felt a terrible pain in his head and asked Hephaestus to break his head open with a hammer. From the crack in his head came Athena, already an adult, and wearing her armor. This is why, in part, why Athena, because she was born fully conscious. She was born an adult. She didn't have to learn. She is the goddess, again, of strategy, of wisdom. It turns out that her mother, Metis, was already pregnant when she was swallowed. Athena, because of this head birth, her brother never made it. Her brother evidently was never conceived, so the prophecy was never fulfilled. And evidently, father and daughter got along very, very well. Athena was the only one of his children that Zeus would listen to. It was entirely uncharacteristic that Athena, Apollo, and Hera would actually conspire together to get rid of Zeus. But getting back to Apollo, in his love life, as I mentioned, not very successful. He has that a terrible incident with Daphne. She is transformed into the laurel tree. He likes a boy called Hyacinth, but Hyacinth dies when he gets hit with a discus. And he liked Marpessa. Marpessa was the only daughter of the king of Aetolia, granddaughter of Ares, the god of war. Very beautiful. Her father, Avenus, was very possessive, and he wanted her to stay by his side all through her life. He trained her to become a warrior. Venus did not want his daughter married to anyone and said that any suitor she might have, any potential husband, could challenge him to a chariot race. If the suitor lost the race, then the suitor would have to die. And that was initially successful enough to dissuade everyone. Venus was sure of his success because he had very good horses that had been given to him by Ares himself, his father. However, at one point, a person called Idas, the prince of Messenia in the Peloponnese, Idas was the son of Aetherius and Arene. He was sure that he was going to win the race because Poseidon himself had given Idas a chariot with wings. Idas did win the race and demanded Marpessa, as his bride, just as the father had promised. However, Venus resorted to treachery. He went back on his word and tried to prevent Idas from marrying his daughter. But of course, that wasn't going to happen. Idas had a winged chariot. He was easily able to kidnap Marpessa, and they flew away together. Venus lost hope and drowned himself in a river. Today, that river is called the Venus River and flows in through Aetolia to the Ionian Sea. Meanwhile, Idas and Marpessa reached Mycenae and spent the night in a temple. The next morning, when Idas woke up, he realized that his bride was missing. Apollo had seen her during the night and had stolen her away. He had kidnapped her. Idas got very angry, ran after Apollo in the winged chariot, and was ready to do whatever was necessary to get his wife back. You can imagine the battle. The battle lasted all day, from sunup to sundown, from dawn to dusk. The two men fighting over the girl. Now, after so many hours, the rivals were still at it, and the noise of their battle was reaching Olympus. And this was annoying. Zeus decided to intervene and put an end to this battle. Now, the fight between these two was a draw. It was even, un empate, even Steven. Zeus asked Marpessa to choose the man she wanted to marry. And this caused genuine consternation. Marpessa herself, you can imagine, Apollo, divinely handsome and attractive, and he was in a position to give her anything she wanted. However, as a god, he would be ageless. As a god, he would be unfaithful. All the gods are philanderers, and that was notorious. I mean, she would grow old. She would lose her beauty. Impossible to intervene, but remember, there had been the case of this a nymph who fell in love with a mortal man, and she asked Zeus to give him the gift of immortality. And Zeus was in a good mood. Zeus conceded this, you know, as a special case, gave him the gift of immortality, of eternal life. However, she had stupidly forgotten to ask Zeus to give him the life, the gift of eternal youth. And so he simply grew older and older and older and smaller and smaller. And so eventually he was the size of a cricket, un grillo, and looked a lot like a cricket. She kept him in a box. And, you know, that was one case of immortality. Mycenae understood that she would lose her beauty. It would be a short relationship with a god. And Idas was not handsome. Idas was a warrior and had to, you know, that kind of brutality. But yet, he could have a good relationship. She made up her mind. She said no to Apollo and chose Idas as her husband. Apollo left in disgrace, and Idas and Marpessa got married and lived happily ever after. All right, I'll be back in a couple of minutes with the second part of the program.
Estoy creando la fórmula mágica para aprender inglés. Añado 5 semanas, 5 horas a la semana de lunes a viernes. Unas gotas de listening and speaking. Enciendo el catalizador y...
Que no te cuenten cuentos. No existen fórmulas mágicas para aprender inglés, por mucho que algunos se empeñen en idearlas. Pero con nuestros cursos trimestrales puedes mejorarlo en solo 3 meses. Los cursos trimestrales de Vaughan son ideales para gente que necesita resultados a medio plazo y a un precio asequible. Descúbrelos llamando al 911-335-833 o en grupovaughan.com.
There's a saying in Spanish, lo barato es caro. This is very true in my business. If you find a cheap solution, wonderful. Congratulations. You will pay less money, yes, but in exchange for nothing.
Aprender a comunicarse en inglés para lograr afrontar situaciones en inglés tanto en el terreno personal como en el profesional, adquirir un dominio privilegiado del idioma que le permita completar su desarrollo profesional. Hay un producto que le garantice todo esto.
Al entrar en el mercado laboral, lo único que cuenta es ser más atractivo que otros candidatos, gozar de mayor estimación. Y el aspecto que más impacta a una empresa cuando mira un candidato joven es su nivel de inglés. Si es muy alto, es contratado. Si no lo es, pues no. Aunque sea el número uno en su promoción, nuestro MIP, nuestro Máster en Inglés Profesional, resuelve este tema para el candidato.
Máster en Inglés Profesional de Vaughan. Infórmese en el 911-335-833. 911-335-833.
Si tienes un smartphone o una tablet, no tienes excusas. Descarga ya nuestra app de Vaughan Radio y podrás escuchar nuestra radio en directo, enviarnos tus tweets, conocer nuestra parrilla, acceder a nuestros podcasts y enterarte de todas las novedades de Vaughan. Aprende inglés en cualquier momento y en cualquier lugar con la app de Vaughan Radio.
Si no te apuntas a los 6 días en Vaughan Town, lo único que podemos recomendar a cambio son 6 meses viviendo y trabajando en el extranjero, en un país de habla inglesa. Solo 6 días en Vaughan Town te aupa más que 6 meses fuera. ¿No nos crees? Manda a Vaughan Town a un amigo o empleado que esté desesperado con inglés y obsérvele 6 días después. El cambio que verás te sorprenderá. La inversión en tiempo y dinero tendrá un retorno impresionante.
Este año quiero recomendarte nuestro programa de formación más completo y potente que multiplicará tus oportunidades. Seguro que has oído hablar de él. Es nuestro máster en inglés profesional. Además, lo tienes disponible en todos los horarios, mañanas, tardes o fin de semana. La próxima convocatoria está ya muy cerca y, como siempre, a estas alturas ya son pocas las plazas que quedan. Si este año quieres ver un cambio significativo en tu inglés, esta es la mejor opción. ¿Por qué no reservas tu cita para hacer tu prueba de nivel? Sin compromiso, llámanos 911-133-5833. Toma nota. 911-133-5833. Sin duda, podemos asegurarte que realizando el esfuerzo y dedicación necesaria, avanzarás muy notablemente con el dominio del inglés y te sentirás cómodo o cómoda en cualquier ámbito, tanto profesional como personal. Ven a hacer tu prueba de nivel. Sin compromiso, tu prueba de nivel gratis. Llámanos 911-133-5833. 911-133-5833.
Cursos trimestrales de Vaughan, un curso a su medida con los mejores profesores y el método más eficaz. Clases de 6 alumnos como máximo durante 3 meses en un horario totalmente flexible a elegir entre 1 y 2 clases semanales. Pues suena muy bien.
La verdad es que sí. A ver. Específicamente diseñado para alumnos que necesitan resultados pero no pueden comprometer su agenda a largo plazo y que solo disponen de 1 o 2 días semanales para dedicarle a su inglés. ¿Ese eres tú?
Pues me apunto, pero ya. Vas a ver tú dentro de 3 meses qué nivelazo. ¿Dónde está el teléfono? 91133 5833.
Estás escuchando Vaughan Radio.
You're listening to Vaughan Radio.
Vaughan Radio.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Western Civilization, from Mesopotamia to Silicon Valley. I'm your host. My name is Guy Williams. And on this part of the program, the second half of the program, I'm going to be talking about one of the greatest myths in all of Western civilization, one of the greatest stories that we tell each other, we tell ourselves to make sense out of who we are. It goes back to ancient Greek times. There are parallels in other ancient civilizations, but this particular story has been interpreted and reinterpreted all throughout history. Every culture uses it as a sort of mirror to try and explain us to ourselves. I'm talking about the myth of Prometheus. Prometheus means forethought. Pro meaning before, and the Metheus being thought. Now, Prometheus was extraordinarily clever. Prometheus is a trickster. You can't trust him. The gods can't trust him. The Titans can't trust him. Remember that he is a Titan who went over to serve the gods, went to the enemy, and then got between the gods and mankind. He is the great benefactor of mankind at the expense of the gods. And the gods have decided to punish us because of Prometheus's intervention. And yes, there's a lot of material there for the Greeks, the ancient Greeks, and for subsequent generations to think about. In the early days of the universe, there was a struggle for empire between Zeus, on the one hand, the gods with Zeus, and the Titans, that great race of unbelievably large beings that ruled the earth before the gods. The Titans were literally giants in heaven and earth. And, at least according to the story, they knew no law. They were simply there for violence and pillage. They took whatever they wanted. And they did not care about chaos or suffering that this might cause. However, Prometheus, the wisest of all the Titans, tried to persuade them that that violence is not the answer. That might, might is not right necessarily. No, you have. There's more. There's more to that. There's a certain kind of culture, laws, and if this continued, Prometheus believed that the end would inevitably be chaos and destruction. So,
When they refused to listen to him, Prometheus went renegade. Prometheus turned over to the enemy. He left them and went to Zeus. He helped Zeus so very well that the Titans were completely overthrown, right? Derrocados. And they went down into Tartarus. Remember that Tartarus, the underworld, Tartarus holds not just human beings. Tartarus is there for gods as well and for Titans. There are all sorts of conscious creatures down there, non-human creatures, that are suffering in pain just as humans are in the underworld. They went down to Tartarus where some of them became volcanoes. When they complain down there, when they use their violence, they shake the roots of the mountains. One of the Titans, Enceladus, is under Mount Etna. Mount Etna in Sicily that erupts periodically. Now, another of the Titans, perhaps the most famous of them all, is Atlas. Atlas was made to stand and take the weight of the world on his giant shoulders. Very briefly, Hercules tricked Atlas into helping him. Hercules took the burden of the weight of the world from Atlas, but then gave it back to him, and yes, the entire world is on Atlas's back. Atlas, supposed to reside in the mountains of North Africa, in what is today Morocco, in the mountain chain that we call the Atlas Mountains, precisely because of this Titan. Now, according to many, this began a golden age where there were gods and there were men. The men were living next to the gods. They were living among the gods. According to some stories, they were sharing the same tables as the gods. There wasn't that great a distinction between gods and men. Certainly a proximity, but at the same time, perhaps because it was a golden age, people were living so well that they simply didn't care. They didn't care about improvement. They didn't care about culture. They didn't care about technology. They had no need for that, just as the gods have no need for that. Mortals were light of heart, very much like the immortals. Mortals had not a thought in their heads. Their heads were empty. Their hearts were light, and their heads were empty. Now, this distinguished them from the gods, and yet, neither gods nor men knew how to build or plant or weave. They had no curiosity, no wish to cross the sea, to navigate, to learn how to navigate. At one point, Zeus, when he was still new on the job, just after he had taken over, like any young ruler, he was very eager, right? Tenía mucho afán. He was eager to make all kinds of reforms and changes. And as we say in English, a new broom sweeps clean. That is an idiom that we use, right? Frase hecha. A new broom sweeps clean. Meaning that when somebody takes a job, a role, a position, they usually come in with all kinds of new ideas. And they want, just as a question of principle, they want to do away with, they want to get rid of the practices of the predecessor. Now, another idiom that we have, which is, as far as I know, has no equivalent in Spanish, is to throw the baby out with the bathwater. This means that when you have something that you don't like, something that is no longer of use, for example, bath water after the bath has been taken, and, of course, in traditional families, it would be the head of the house who takes a bath, and then, generally, according to seniority, the elderly people would begin to take their baths, the youngest children taking their baths. By the time it was the baby was ready to be bathed, that water was absolutely black and filthy. That was what was left for the baby. Sometimes you couldn't even see the baby in that black bath water. And once the bathing is finished, it's time to throw out the bath water. However, you run the risk of throwing the baby out with the bath water. Metaphorically, of course, this means that when you want to eliminate something, it's quite possible that what you're going to eliminate, that you're going to eliminate too much, that a lot of what is being thrown away has intrinsic merit. It can still be used, can still be valuable. So, for example, in an office, the new boss says that we are eliminating the old procedure, but somebody speaks up and says, no, that would be throwing the baby out with the bathwater. In other words, there is quite a lot of value in what we're doing. You don't have to get rid of all of it. You can just reform slightly, modify slightly. In this case, it's absolutely literal. Zeus of Olympus, god of gods, he wanted to get rid of humanity. He decided that he would destroy the race of men and replace them with some new order of being. You see this again and again in the ancient world, especially by means of flood, inundación. And on my next program, I want to compare some of those flood myths, because they were universal in the ancient world. And the comparison and contrast among them is absolutely fascinating. And of course, in the biblical tradition, you have Noah. But in the Book of Gilgamesh, where the biblical tradition was taken from, where it originated, you have, well, a very different flood myth in ancient Egypt. And this goes back to Sanskrit, to the earliest writings of ancient India. They also have a flood. The Greeks had a flood. I will talk about that on my next program. But for now, we'll say that Zeus proposed to destroy human beings. Prometheus heard about this scheme and, unlike the other gods, Prometheus was a titan, not a god. And so perhaps for this very reason, he felt some kind of connection to humans. And he was filled with indignation. The human, one of the people that survived the flood, the flood in the Greek tradition, was precisely Prometheus's son, Deucalion. Prometheus tells him to build an ark, like Noah, and survive. Now, Zeus is a bit of a tyrant in this way. Prometheus convinced Zeus that human beings were worthwhile, that he did not have to throw the baby out with the bathwater. And Prometheus did more. He civilized human beings. According to some traditions, he created human beings. He created human beings out of water and clay and breathed life into them, just like the biblical story of Adam. This is what Prometheus did in the Greek tradition. First, he built men out of clay. Then he taught men how to build other shapes, other things from clay, clay arthia. He taught men the art of ceramics. He taught men the art of construction and architecture, also with clay and with roofs of straw, paja. He showed men how to make bricks and then taught them how to carve stone. Finally, he taught men numbers and letters. He taught them all about the seasons of the year and the coming and going of stars, the night sky, with the solid identification of the different stars in the sky, of the zodiac, for example, it was possible to have rudimentary celestial navigation, navigation at night. You were not limited to coastal navigation, right? Cabotaje, with the identification of the stars. Then he taught men botany and pharmacology. He taught men the arts of cooking. He taught men how to plant fields, how to tame domar, how to tame animals, and how to ride the water, build ships, and make them go fast, like birds. At least according to the Greeks. Now, the Greeks were an enormously inventive people, and one of the things that we most admire about them, about their culture, one of the things that stands out about their culture is how very curious they were. They had simply an intrinsic curiosity. Unlike Egyptians, Mesopotamians, and certainly unlike the Romans, they were not as interested in the practical side of things. They were pursuing curiosity for its own sake. This is where they get the rudiments of science, of natural philosophy. This is where they get philosophy in general. Curiosity without a purpose. Curiosity divorced from practical applications. Curiosity for the sake of curiosity. And at least according to this myth, where they got that from was precisely Prometheus. With all of these new gifts coming, that is what awakened the intrinsic curiosity within human beings, certainly within the Greeks. So they went to they wanted more. They wanted to explore. They wanted to see things. They wanted to do things. Finally, Prometheus betrayed the gods. Prometheus went secretly into heaven and stole the treasure of the immortals. Using the flame of the sun, going directly to the source, he put the sun within a hinojo, within a fennel root. Now remember that fennel does not burn very well. Up until relatively recently, when people were being executed by being tied to a pole, a stake, and being burned to death for heresy or sodomy or whatever, the people who wanted to slow down this process, prolong the agony, and make it as painful as possible, they used to put fennel, hinojo, they used to put fennel on the fire so that it would burn more slowly. In this case, it was the fire itself which was hidden in fennel before coming to the earth. Now, fire was the greatest gift. Fire was what transformed human beings into what they are today. However, it was the product of theft, hurto, right? It was a cosmic theft, and Zeus would not stand for it. He couldn't take the secret of fire back, but he could begin to punish. He punished Prometheus by chaining him in the Caucasus Mountains, right, near Colchis, right, Colchide, not far from where Jason brought back the golden fleece, El Vellón de Oro, right, not far from where the king's daughter, Medea, the witch, fell in love with Jason, helped him steal the golden fleece, and went back with him to Greece. That same Colchis, right, Colchide, that is where Prometheus was chained to the mountains. Every day, a vulture came to eat his liver. However, he was immortal. And he could suffer from pain, but he was immortal. So in the night, the liver would grow back. And by morning, Prometheus would be whole again. The entire process to be repeated day after day for eternity. Now, according to one of the myths, Prometheus, in the end, is set free. There are many ways that the story ends. In all of these stories, Prometheus is set free. In some cases, by Hercules himself. In others, through an expiation. It happened that Chiron was the greatest of all the centaurs, right? A part man, part horse. The centaurs were very, very wise, but very violent. They were uncontrolled, right? They had very, very little self-discipline. Chiron, at one point, was in a great deal of pain. There had been a wedding celebration, and the centaurs had simply gotten drunk and tried to take away the bride. They didn't want the wedding to happen. They were guests at this wedding, but they pretty much stopped it from happening. Well, naturally, the bride's family tried to defend her. The groom's family tried to defend the bride. Everybody was against the centaurs, and evidently a poisoned arrow flew through the air and hit Chiron. Now, Chiron was immortal. However, because of the poison in this arrow, he was in constant pain. In the end, he decided that his torment would have to come to an end somehow. So he chose to sacrifice himself and sacrifice his immortality, which is something very special, something you don't see every day. He decided to sacrifice his immortality to stop the punishment of Prometheus. The gods heard his prayer, took away his pain, took away his immortality, and later on, he died like any mortal man. Zeus ultimately rewarded him by transforming him into a constellation, in the sky. You can see him with the horse's body and the arrow. He has a bow and arrow. Prometheus was also free. And the human beings. The human beings were now no longer in a state of nature. The gods decided to leave humans. They decided that their previous proximity in the Golden Age was a mistake. And these humans were going to have to suffer. They were going to have to work very hard. It was going to be the only thing they actually knew how to do. And they, of course, were no longer in direct contact with the gods. On subsequent programs, I'm going to talk about how Prometheus was used, for example, in early Christian times. They really have to make an effort so that people will not confuse Prometheus with God or Jesus, right? Making Adam or suffering this expiation, dying for man's sins. They have a very, very difficult time trying to convince people that Prometheus is not involved in the Christian story. Later on, Prometheus, well, as the founder of technology, is going to be very important, in the history of philosophy. But I'll talk about that on my next program.
Aprende inglés con Vaughan y el Colegio Europeo de Madrid. El Colegio Europeo de Madrid es un centro multilingüe ubicado en Las Rozas, en la calle Colquide 14, para alumnos de 0 a 18 años, con una metodología propia e innovadora que potencia lo mejor de cada alumno y que ahora, con la colaboración de Vaughan, también ofrece clases de inglés para adultos, con profesores Vaughan. Llama al 91-636-1919 o, si lo prefieres, escribe un mail a vaughan@educacem.com y aprovechate de la colaboración entre